Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Chris Buchanani. Chris, end of June. Oh my goodness, what a recruiting month, huh?
Yeah, I mean, Penn Staters on a real heater. Congrats to James Franklin and company.
Yes, they did a heck of a job. Let's start with this. I think a lot of Penn State people were concerned that NIL or the lack of NIL was hurting recruiting.
Yeah, justifiably so.
Okay, that answers my question. I was going to ask, were you one of those who believed that? And does this streak this past couple weeks change your mind on that?
It does not change my mind at all, but it does set my mind at ease that to whatever extent we're going to experience some negative effects from where we sit in the NIL pileup right now, they're not going to set in perhaps as quickly as worst case scenario suggested they might. So that's reassuring to the extent that you can feel better this week than maybe you did 14 days ago. I think that's the case. But I still also believe the long-term structural problem is there, and I'm very concerned about it.
Well, this streak has moved Penn State's recruiting ranking back up into the top 10, depending where you look. I see them. I think it's on Rivals, has them ranked seventh. If they were to stay there, it would be a top 10 finish. Again, Penn State has already got 20 commits. So when they do the ranking, quantity has something to do with this also. Sure. It's not just quality. So probably before signing day, there will be, I'll call it, several teams will probably pass Penn State in the ranking. I'm guessing they'll end up somewhere in the low teens where they usually do, the 13, 14, 15 range. Are you satisfied that would be good enough?
Well, it's not great, obviously. You can look at Michigan as a team that was not consistently killing it with top five classes that then went on to win a national championship. But again, I think you ought to be careful using Michigan as the model of what you're trying to replicate, because there were so many things that were kind of unique there. I think, again, I've said it many times before, whatever issues you may have with Jim Harbaugh, there's no question the guy can coach. And part of the reason that he's so effective is he's so laser focused on the type of player he wants to have in his building and the type of system he wants to run that he can recruit specifically to that. He can develop specifically to that. And he's great at it, that he can elevate the type of class you're talking about, like a top 12 class, a top 15 class, and integrate them into a system that by the time he gets an upperclassman heavy team like he did last season, with the right pieces in place and the right breaks going their way, because some of this is luck, as I've said before, he can win a national championship. So from that perspective, if you're trying to chase Ohio State or any of the big dogs in the SEC, you got to get back into not only the top 10, but the upper half of the top 10, at least a top six class. You got to pepper one of those in there from time to time. But on the other hand, Jim, and I've said this before, I think, you know, when we lost out on the quarterback recruit earlier in the cycle, I don't get that worked up about recruiting anymore. I don't know that I ever really did. But now, to me, with the combination of NIL plus the transfer portal, I think it is less important what your group of kids who are still in high school who are supposedly committed to your program actually looks like, because I don't even get worked up when I see these commitments come in, because I think we got a long way to even early national signing day. And, you know, you take a look at the tailback, Henderson, I think is his name is, who, you know, one day puts out a 110% committed to Penn State tweet. And then 5 days later, he's at Auburn. Right. So it's a long, bumpy road from getting the commitment to actually getting the signed letter of intent. And now, again, because of the transfer portal and the ability to just come in at any time and basically have a free-for-all scenario where you can offer any player any amount of money at any time and they can leave your program and go right to another one. Recruiting never stops. Like, we have never been closer to the old Jerry Seinfeld bit about fans are really rooting for shirts than we are with college football in 2024.
Well, there's no doubt in any sport, we are rooting for the uniform, that team. As I've mentioned 1,000 times on this show, I'm a Mets fan. As soon as he gets traded to the Phillies, I hate that player, okay?
Yeah, but at least there are contracts in professional sports. Like, there's not total volatility at all times like we currently have in college football. And beyond that, like, let's understand what we transition from, which is one of the key differentiators of the sport for a century, was that there was a very, very, very low, especially compared to pro sports in the free agency era, level of transition from one program to the next. You didn't see a lot of transfers. There was not a lot of turnover. And what appealed to me, and I think a lot of other fans, was that in college sports, these guys picked a school and then they were part of your club. They were Nittany Lions for life. Like, yeah, you could play for the Phillies and the Mets and the Red Sox and the Yankees in your career because you go where the money is. But for most of our lives and most of the sports history, when you picked Michigan, you were a Michigan man. When you picked Penn State, you were a Nittany Lion. And that meant something. And it was a distinction and a status you could carry with you for the rest of your life. And so it's just not that way anymore. It may settle down a little bit till we figure out how, you know, revenue sharing and compensation is going to work. But circling back to the conversation, because we're in this moment of extraordinary volatility, to me, recruiting is still really important because it creates the foundation of what your program is. And Penn State, fortunately, with, you know, maybe one or two exceptions, I'm thinking of like King Mack, we have a very, very few guys we get on campus and they're going to be impact players and then we lose them to another program. So your high school recruiting is important, but it's also never meant less than it does right now.
That's true. But have we overstated the volatility, at least on the recruiting part of it? And I look at this, Chris, that we as Penn State fans are concerned. And I do think there's some reason for it on the NIL front. I think that Penn State has lost players because of NIL. I think Missouri wanted that quarterback more than, I shouldn't say they wanted him more than Penn State did, but they were willing to offer him more than Penn State was. And if that is the reason the kid went to Missouri, I'm really okay with that as far as the kid goes. I don't blame him. But are we overstating the NIL factor? And let me explain to you why I asked that question. 10 years ago, before NIL was a gleam in anybody's eye, who were the teams that always won the recruiting battles, the recruiting rankings? You would have Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia at the top, almost without exception. Take a look at the recruiting rankings, Chris, for this coming season. Who do you think the top three teams are?
I'm sure you just named them.
Yes, I did. It's the same top three teams. So what I'm wondering is, has it really changed the recruiting landscape really that much? And if we use the quarterback from Pennsylvania and he went to Missouri, and I don't know this for a fact, but just put it out there that Missouri was able to get a big-time quarterback, is that really a bad thing for college football overall, even if Penn State doesn't like it?
Well, my first response to your question is that a cynic, Jim, would say that the schools that were already paying players had the least amount of adaptation to do once it became legal. So we'll say that about the programs that are right at the top of the pile. And to that point, I think the way in which NIL has come in and made life more challenging for a team that is not in the top five, but consistently in the top 15, like Penn State, is that it has maybe not, at least in our case, made it a heck of a lot easier for us to knock one of the elite top tier programs off their perch, but it has made it easier for the many programs below us to scrabble their way up and vulture away a few recruits who would have otherwise gone to a program like Penn State. So you look at the success that Mizzou is having in the last couple of recruiting cycles. You look at Rutgers and what they're doing. All of that, they stole a recruit from Penn State just last week. They took a linebacker from Linebacker U, for God's sakes. And why is it? Because if you can get access to a couple of sugar daddy donors who are willing to bankroll your NIL efforts and you deploy them in a savvy way, you can start, chipping away, maybe not at the biggest of the big boys, but the next tier down, and Penn State resides in that tier. So I think that's what we need to be concerned about. Not that we're not gaining any ground on the teams we're chasing, but that the teams that are chasing us are catching up. So that's my primary concern there. And to your question, is it good for the sport? I think probably actually, yes. I do think you look at the last playoff field and you look at you have the first national championship game without an SEC participant in the playoff era. And or maybe the second, actually, because I think Ohio State beat Oregon the first year, if I'm remembering that correctly. But rarely do you see a championship game, at least not contested by the SEC. I do think it's bringing a little bit more parity to the sport.
It does. So if we take off our Penn State hat for a moment, it's okay, the entire college sports scene, it might be a little bit better. Rutgers can compete. If not, they're not going. Rutgers is not going to become Ohio State. I think we can both agree on that, right?
Sure.
But
they could become like Iowa or Purdue or Illinois, which for Rutgers would be a massive improvement from where they were before that.
Exactly, and that's a good thing. And you have a Missouri in the Southeast Conference who probably never pictured themselves competing with Alabama, Georgia, and I still don't think they will, but they could, even if they're not a threat to be a winner of the Southeast Conference, they're going to be a playoff team, a playoff caliber team.
Yeah, they could go to the playoffs. They could go to the Citrus Bowl and make a lot of money. I mean, these are good scenarios for a program like Missouri, no question.
Chris, when we come back, you mentioned earlier about Michigan had a plan on how they did things to potentially or to actually win a national championship. When we come back, I want to ask you, can Penn State learn a lesson from how Michigan did it? We'll get Chris's answer when we come back.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris, I'm Jim. We're talking Penn State football. It's quarter number two. Our topic today has been a lot of news about Penn State's recruiting, a lot of success in this last month. Chris, bunch of four stars came in. They brought in about nine guys, I think, this month. Alleviated, I think, some of the anxiety Penn State fans were feeling. But I don't think we're still not seeing them necessarily competing with the Ohio States and Georgias at the top of the recruiting ranking. And early on, you mentioned Michigan. Michigan has probably been about comparable to Penn State in recruiting, and yet they managed to win, what is it, three straight Big Ten championships. They won a national championship. You gave a lot of credit to Jim Harbaugh and how he recruited. My question to you is, now, it's not like he took Rutgers to the national championship, okay? He took Michigan. So Michigan at least recruited well. has very good talent, if not the elite that those couple other teams do, comparable to Penn State. So is there a lesson there in how James Franklin could run his program?
So let me say two things about Michigan. The first thing, or just in relation to your question generally, the first thing about Michigan, let's also not forget what the program, and you're completely right, all the ingredients are there. There are maybe a dozen, perhaps 15 programs in the country that can, or that really credibly have all the ingredients to contend for and win a national championship in different measure. I think Penn State's one of them, and Michigan certainly is. So it helps a whole heck of a lot to be in one of those places that can do those things. Again, I still think, we talked about this a few weeks ago, maybe the most impressive reclamation job was, whether you like Dabo Swinney or not, like the fact that Clemson muscled its way into the elite tier of college football for practically a decade and won a couple of national championships. Very, very impressive. Nevertheless, still a school that had won a national title in the past. But getting back to Michigan, I do think it's important to remember what they looked like during the first several years under Jim Harbaugh. As I've mentioned before, if he doesn't fake COVID before the Ohio State game in 2020 and loses that game by like 60 points, which he was going to, he probably gets fired and none of this happens. And you can't have this conversation without acknowledging the unbelievable coincidental timing of the turnaround in fortunes for Michigan on the field and the timeline of when supposedly Connor Stallions started deploying this massive spying operation. So we are eventually going to get more information about what happened there. We'll get the clear picture one day. I don't think it's going to affect anything about, you know, Michigan's national title, at least in terms of the way it's recognized. But maybe it does affect Jim Harbaugh's legacy, and it maybe gives us a little bit more insight into how legit is this idea that he somewhat bucked the trend of the overall formula. Did he just put his thumb on the scale just enough that it tipped over the result of some of those games that he was consistently losing through his first 4 or 5 years as head coach there? Because that was always the problem for Michigan, right? All the ingredients were there and they could be really good. They could be great, but they couldn't be elite. And then all of a sudden Michigan is elite. And it just so happens that the exact damn near to the day timing of when the elite starts, there's also these questions about, were they gaining an unfair advantage? So you have to mention that when you're trying to apply this model and saying, could it be replicated elsewhere? So then the second point is that I'm not sure that James Franklin isn't that same type of coach in terms of being rigidly disciplined about the process he wants to follow and the type of guy he wants to have on campus. One thing that I think has been a positive for James, and I know this is rankling the portion of our listener base who just loves James Franklin so much, but I think he, Jim, has done a pretty good job in coordinating with his staff to be smart about the type of player that they want to bring to Penn State. And I attribute to, in some part, that approach of getting the right kind of kid into the program to the success we talked about in the last segment of not losing too many, almost none of your key contributors to the transfer portal. So again, I don't want to make it sound like we're complete paupers here in NIL. Like, there's no way we're keeping guys like Drew Aller and Nick Singleton at Penn State without being able to, you know, compensate them close to market value. But we can still say, like, hey, we were smart about the kind of player we brought in. We're very truthful in the way we advertise Penn State to recruits when they're choosing a program. So when they get here, they're rarely surprised. They know what they're buying and they're all in on it. And so from that perspective, I don't know that we're too far away. And it may just be that, you know, a couple of the tumblers did not fall into place at Penn State like they did at Michigan. And it may be that Michigan just kind of cheated their way around that, you know, extra few yards that they needed to complete the process. So Jim Harbaugh is a good coach. I admire what he did there. But in the back of my head, there is still that qualifier that maybe 5-10 years down the line, when we have some distance and a really complete picture of what went on at Michigan the last few years, we will say, yeah, he was really good at getting that team 95 yards down the field, and then they fudge things a little bit to finish the job.
So to paraphrase what you're saying, Penn State needs to hire Connor Stallions and they have a shot.
I don't know. I'm saying that's one possible answer to your question. And I would be remiss. And I don't even know what I believe about that, but I'd be remiss if I didn't bring it up, especially because, like I said, I mean, it is just, it's strange credulity to its absolute limits that, you know, Michigan consistently was just falling a notch or two below, and then suddenly practically never was. And that happened to be the exact same time that, you know, we look at the timeline of this spying scandal. And what was one of the few times when they did kind of look like the Michigan we had gotten to know from, you know, 2015 to 2019 was that game against TCU, when we know TCU had been tipped off about the signal stealing.
Yes, that's true. And you're right. It may be that this was the case where it was just a little nudge to get them over the top, that they were knocking on the door, and this was just that little push that they needed.
Clichés become cliché because they're true, and it is indeed, Jim, a game of inches.
So setting that aside, because I don't think Penn State is going to hire Connor Stallion, nor would they want to.
Sure.
Let's go back to what Penn State needs to do to get over the top. And I've only half jokingly talked about this because as long as we've been doing this show, Chris, and it's at least 8 years, the question of what does Penn State need to do to take that next step will come up. And only half jokingly, I will say they need better players. Okay.
That's part of it. And at key positions too. I think one point that we hammer on obligatory all the time that I maybe haven't brought up as much here on KSN is that it's not just getting the right players. A big, big part of it is who you get at the line of scrimmage. And specifically, if I had to name one position where I think Penn State has been deficient and where I think the elite programs consistently do well, it's at the interior of the defensive line. There are so few legit difference makers at defensive tackle in any given recruiting class, and they're typically going to the same four or five programs. I think that's just one place. I mean, honestly, Jim, it sounds like an oversimplification, but I believe in my heart the commitment flip of Christian Wilkins from Penn State to Clemson made the difference of at least a playoff spot and probably a national championship, either being in Happy Valley versus in the fake Death Valley.
Well, there's those two positions of tackle, defensive tackle, and quarterback are probably the two toughest positions to recruit because there's just not that many good ones. There's only a handful of them available.
Sure.
And at the top of the heap, you know, the Ohio States, the Alabamas, the Georgias, they will get those guys. And I've often talked about Ohio State's quarterback room, Chris, where Penn State, until Drew Aller came along in the James Franklin era, the highest rated quarterback was Sean Clifford that James Franklin brought in.
Mm-hmm.
And he was not ranked in the top 200 players in the country. Now, we've made the comparison to Clemson and their rise to become one of those elite teams. And you mentioned Christian Wilkins. I'll mention the two other guys, Deshaun Watkins and Trevor Lawrence. There were no Deshaun Watson or Trevor Lawrences coming into the Penn State locker room.
Yeah, and sure.
I think
the closest we ever got was a fake commitment from Justin Fields.
Exactly. And I will point to that as the difference between Penn State and Clemson.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, just in my specific example, you know, Trace McSorley was going to be the guy. And that's the thing. There are inefficiencies. You know, Baker Mayfield was a walk-on. Trace was considered like a three-star safety prospect by a lot of schools. You can game the quarterback position. But yeah, like it's like everything. You know, if you're bringing in high four-stars or five-star guys, the math says you're going to hit more often than you don't.
Right. And Ohio State, like right now, has four top 100 players at the quarterback position. in their locker room. Where Penn State, you know, for years and years had zero. But it leads me to this question, Chris, is even with Penn State having very good talent, but maybe not elite, they do bring in those handful of players once in a while. A couple years ago, it was Nick Singleton, Drew Aller, Abdul Carter. That's where I think the recruiting has to go. Do you see any of those kind of players in this upcoming recruiting class? I don't. I see that happening right now, and we're up against the break here, Chris, so I'll just stall out the last half minute while you think about your response. But my question is going to be, you know, this year, I think is a window that Penn State has with the top-rated quarterback in the country when he came out, the best running back in the country, Abdul Carter, an absolute elite player on the defensive side. Is James Franklin going to be able to take advantage of this talent? And what happens when they walk out the door after this season? Is it going to be a rebuild? Because where Ohio State just reloads that and Alabama and Georgia, for Penn State, it's part of a cycle. I'll let you respond when we come back.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Chris. I'm Jim. We're talking about recruiting, where Penn State sits in the national picture. As typical, I think they're very good. Haven't hit that elite level, which maybe that's keeping them from reaching the elite level on the field also, Chris. Now, one of the differences, looking at this year's recruiting rankings, I mentioned Ohio State, Alabama, and Georgia, the top three teams. And I've started to ask you about elite talent, the really top guys. Right now, there are 14 five-star players who have committed for the upcoming season, okay? Grand total of 14. Seven of them are on those three teams. Mm-hmm. Fully half of the committed five stars are on those three teams that we always expect to compete for a national championship. None of them are on Penn State's recruiting list. My question to you is, do you not need a handful of those really elite players to become an elite team? And does that lead to Penn State, I think, has three of those kind of players on this year's team. If they don't do it this year, are they up for a rebuild afterwards?
Yeah, and again, I one thing I always tell people not to do when they get into these kind of conversations is give me examples of the exception and say that disproves the rule, right? Like, Mike the Mailman loves to poo-poo the whole star ranking system, and he can tell you chapter and verse about, you know, this guy or the other guy through the last, like, 30 years of Penn State football who nobody thought too much of and then had a great season. It's like, yeah, right, Mike, I get that. Every program has players like that, but it's all about the math, right? Like, you just look at what is the probability that you're going to hit based on any star ranking. What's the probability of a team that has the highest aggregate star rating on its roster and its recruiting class doing well? And there's a very, very, very high degree of correlation. So, yeah, I mean, it's a problem for us that we have not broken through that we can compete for more five stars. I don't think it is absolutely necessary. I don't think there's a 0% chance or maybe even a low single digits chance that you can compete for a national championship without a couple of five stars on your roster. But the odds aren't good. I mean, you got to keep chipping away at that. And unfortunately, just structurally, there are some things that are baked in with being Penn State and being where we are, but physically where we're located, kind of where we sit in the pecking order of college football, which is not completely set in concrete, but not very permeable, that pecking order. Those things are going to make it challenging for anyone, James Franklin included, to recruit five stars. So that's just kind of where it's at. I don't have a great answer about how we can recruit more five stars. I do maybe have a great answer about how we can do a workaround. I'll get to that in a moment. But your question about, is this a now or never year? And is there a rebuild in store? I think the answer to both those questions is probably yes. Now, the first part, now or never season, the now or never season was last year. We had a generational defense that we lost a lot of key players to the NFL from last year, and we blew it. Like, that was the now or never chance. I really believe, like, this year, I think, is much more like found money. If this team performs like we expected the 2023 team to, and if you're looking for some comfort, like Penn State as a program going way back does kind of have a tradition of performing better when the spotlight is off of them, when the expectations have been lowered a little bit, than when we're on the front cover of Sports Illustrated in the preseason. So, you know, maybe that's a good sign. But yeah, I think we already blew our now or never shot. Like the way that team performed last year is one of the biggest disappointments in the history of Penn State football for me. I have to go all the way back to 1999 to a team that underperformed its talent level and the opportunity in front of it the way the 2023 Nittany Lions did. So yeah, it's a make or break year in the sense that this is the last shot we have with this talent, but their shot to do it, really, these guys' shot to do it was last year and they didn't. As to whether or not next year is going to be a rebuilding year, I think almost certainly. I don't think we're going to go off a cliff, but there is just no way that I can see, not just with the talent on the roster, but that challenging nature of the schedule, the number of difficult road games Penn State not only has to play, but play consecutively next year. It's going to make 2025 very, very difficult for Penn State. So yeah, this is a big year for the program and a big year for James. He's got to get into the playoffs. And if there's any year where you can finally win a game that people are expecting you to lose, even if it's just on the road at USC, like, this is the time to do it. There's no question about that. What we really need to hope for, Jim, is for them to announce that, like, Florida State and some other team are joining the Big Ten. So for, like, the ninth time in 10 years, they're changing the Big Ten schedule. So we just never have to play that slate we're scheduled to do next year, because that looks like an absolute nightmare.
Well, I think this year's schedule is manageable, Chris. The only game, you know, Ohio State is probably the only game you won't be favored. At USC might be, but I wonder a little bit about USC being more name than anything else, more sizzle than steak. And it also leads me to, I want to segue a little bit to USC and their recruiting. And this is my premise is, at Penn State, and rightfully so, we're always compared to Ohio State. Have been in the same division. It's Ohio State's been the barrier to winning the Big Ten and to making the playoffs. So I get it. I understand. But you're comparing to one of the three teams that is above everybody else. You know, Alabama, Georgia being the other two. I imagine every Southeast Conference team, their fan base compares themselves to those teams and says, why can't we be like Georgia? Why can't we be like Alabama? My point being is, we at Penn State as fans, we say, why can't we be recruit better than Ohio State? But I think that's happening. That feeling is happening at about 100 other schools.
Yep.
For some reason, I have a news aggregator, Chris, that you could put in your favorite topics. And you'll always get that stuff. But I swear if you click on something one time, you will get that all the time. I one time clicked on something about the royal family, and that's I get 10,000 things about it. Well, I must have recently clicked on something with USC football. So my feed is getting just bombarded by USC stuff, okay, over the last week or so. But it caused me to go look into things a little bit deeper because I'm seeing the same gnashing of teeth over the recruiting and what's going on at USC. Now, I think all of us would think USC, Lincoln Riley, they're in Southern California, Chris, and it's USC. They got to be recruiting like crazy. Do you know where their 2025 recruiting class is ranked?
I do not, but I guess you're going to tell me.
That I will, Chris. They're ranked 34th.
And yeah, man, that is one of those places where expectations can smother you. And again, it's all about expectations. It's all about where you were supposed to be. And when Lincoln Riley got there and he brought along Caleb Williams, they did not make that deal and give him all that control and pay him all that money so they could go 7-5. I mean, you could do that with Clay Helton, but pay him a lot less. Yeah. Look, if people are expecting you to underperform and you're a little bit better than they're expecting, everybody's happy. That's Penn State in 2016. Then if they're expecting you to be a national title contender and you lose two games, the same two games, you know, the same amount of loss you had the previous year, they're furious and they're still lamenting it, you know, practically a decade later, like we are with Penn State from 2017. And yeah, that's where USC is at right now.
And let's add this to the equation with USC. They actually did have some elite players. I talked earlier about five-star players. They actually had two five-star defensive linemen, two of them. They both decommitted a week ago, Chris, along with the four-star safety. And guess what? They still have a five-star player, the most important position. They have a five-star quarterback. Guess what? He's flirting, openly flirting with other schools.
Do you know how many decommits Ole Miss, the team that we watched whoop our butts up and down the field in the Peach Bowl, lost this past week, Jim?
How many?
Five. Five decommits from Ole Miss. This is why I do not get worked up about these recruiting commitments or decommitments or whatever. It's like there's going to be so much volatility before these kids even get to campus. And then you are constantly and instantly re-recruiting them for as long as you can keep them there. So yeah, we get so focused on Penn State and we think, oh my God, this happened, or oh my God, that happened. That is happening everywhere. It's happening at every program across the country, including ones who are supposedly a little bit farther along in the process than we are.
Well, that's
Look, there are problems. Don't get me wrong, but sometimes in our myopia, our sole focus on Penn State, I think we get a little unreasonably panicked. Yeah.
Well, and Ole Miss is a good example. Remember, they're also the team that brought in so many of these very highly regarded transfer players from the portal. And while they were doing that and everybody had a fit of envy for Ole Miss, they end up losing an All-American running back who runs off to Ohio State. Probably because Ohio State offered him more money, Chris.
Well, precisely because, Jim, if my understanding is correct, that he felt slighted, that as the bell cow back for that program that got them to where they were and the ability to attract those transfer portal guys last year, he was suddenly being offered less as a guy who had been there than the money they were paying to entice these transfers to come in. So he all of a sudden felt like, hey, I've been here. I've been doing I'm the one who did the work to get you here. And now I'm getting rewarded less than these players who went to other schools. And then so he decided to shop around. And thanks very much, Lane. I sure appreciate that we're going to have to see that guy in Beaver Stadium this year. Thanks so much.
Exactly. So even, Chris, when you have this situation where it appears you are a school team program with all the money to do this work in the transfer portal, it's not all perfect. There are negatives to it, too, and these things are happening. So we saw that at Ole Miss. Now, the question becomes, if you're Penn State is there a model that will work for you that will get you the next place? We're going to talk about that when we come back.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Chris. I'm Jim. We're talking about Penn State and recruiting, and they had a huge month in June. We brought in a lot of very good players. But the question I left you with, Chris, when we finished up quarter number three was this, that you're not going to be Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia when you're recruiting. I talked about getting at least a handful of, you know, the top end guys where you really hit on them. Whereas Ohio State brings in over a couple years, four top 100 quarterbacks or five, and they have several bites at the apple. But if you hit on Drew Aller, you're okay there at that position. But the question becomes, is there a path? Is there a way for a Penn State type of team to get to the promised land, even if they're not going to recruit like Alabama and Georgia and Ohio State? Is there a path somewhere?
Yes, I think there is. And so let's go back to what I started at the top of the hour with, and that's the approach that Jim Harbaugh took at Michigan and his idea of the kind of player he wanted to have, the kind of system he wanted to run. I also think an important ingredient in his success there, and again, if you're just tuning in, like, yes, a qualifier, I understand there's a suspicion he may have cheated, okay? Like, I acknowledge that. But it wasn't 100% cheating. The guy's a good coach, whether you like him or not, whether or not you believe he is a serial killer, just allegedly. I'm just asking questions. I'm just saying there are a lot of bad things you could say about Jim Harbaugh, that he's a bad football coach. He's not one of them. He's also the definition of a Michigan man, right? That guy understood the community of Ann Arbor. He understood the institution. He understood the fan and alumni base. One thing that I think is great, Jim, about college football, and it's maybe a little bit more watered down in the modern age, but it's still important, is that programs have an identity, okay? You can't take Rich Rodriguez and plug him in at Michigan and succeed. You can't take Bill Callahan and take him to Lincoln, Nebraska and succeed. You've got to have somebody who understands the bones of the place. The identity of the program doesn't change. And for every big program in college football, your identity is not a liability. It's a strength. You can't try to swim against the current and change it. You got to lean into it and be what you are, because that's what got you into the exclusive club of schools that can contend to win a national championship on the field. And so I go back to the approach because that Joe used, because the same geographic limitations, the same kind of limits of brand appeal that we're dealing with in 2024 had, you know, comparable limitations in the 1970s, the 1980s. And Joe's idea always was that he wanted to build a team that could contend for a national title every 4 years. And like Goon has talked about this, the blockbuster recruiting class that he was a part of when he came in, and then the way the next recruiting class and the class after were approached from the mindset of, we've got to find guys. Of course, we're always trying to get superstars, but we have to prioritize finding players who are going to be complementary to the studs we just brought in that blockbuster class. And you do that, you hit one or two of those home runs every two to three cycles, and then you continue swinging for the fences, but you just make sure you're making contact in a smart way where you're supplementing your roster with Penn State guys. And so I hit on this point all the time. In the 10 years that James Franklin has been here, Jim, the most success we've had is 2016-17. Who are the players who formed the heart and soul of those teams? You needed Saquon Barkley, but you also had guys like Trace McSorley, who I talked about as a three-star recruit, Grant Haley, who's a legacy kid, Marcus Allen, Jason Kabinda, Amani Uruwariye. Like these were not players that every big program in the country was beating down their door to get them on campus. But they were players who fit the mold of what James Franklin wanted in a human being and in a football player, and who understood the appeal of Penn State. They didn't want to play college football. They wanted to play college football at Penn State. They would bleed and fight for this place, and probably had a little bit of a chip on their shoulder and attitude that they weren't getting recruited by more players, so more schools. So it meant something to those players that a school like Penn State was going to give them an opportunity to run out of the tunnel. So yes, you absolutely need to get your thoroughbreds, but then you need to be laser focused and smart about finding complementary players in other classes. So you asked me, do I think there's a Drew Aller or a Nick Singleton in this recruiting class? Maybe not, but I'm not sure that that really matters in any one year in isolation, because if you're smart about bringing in players who you feel great about developing, then that doesn't really matter to me. I think we need to be a little bit more thoughtful and strategic about going out and finding the Jason Kabindas and the Grant Haleys and the Marcus Allens of the world. And if you give me a recruiting class where you can say, I feel really, really good that we have 5 to 6 guys in this group that when we develop them, they are going to play above expectations and they are going to be complementary in a critical way to some of the other star players we're going to add to the roster. That's fine with me, because to me, that's the formula for Penn State.
Chris, in the break, you and I were looking back at some of the recent recruiting classes and where there was disappointment, and 2021 was the class we landed on that was not very good. I think it was ranked like 20 or 21st.
21st by 24/7 Sports. And there was a lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth about that class.
There was. The following year, they were ranked, what, 6th or 7th?
Yeah.
I'm going to go through this class a little bit with you.
21 you're talking about.
I think this was 22. Yeah, I'm looking at the 22 class.
Okay, you're talking about the number 6 class. Okay, yeah, let's do it.
Yes. At the top end, Drew Aller and Nick Singleton, yep, and Dennis Sutton, they had 3 5-star guys.
Yep.
So they had their superstars. By the way, Abdul Carter, 4-star, but do you know he was the 33rd ranked linebacker in the country? Do you know that he was also 9th in the state of Pennsylvania?
Yeah, so I did. I was higher on Abdul than a lot of the recruiting services were. I didn't know that. Obviously, you can't say with confidence, oh, this guy's going to be a super duper star. But I thought he was the type of player who could play right away, which he did. Yeah, I think he was a little underserved by his recruiting ranking.
And I think Penn State thought that too. Otherwise, he wouldn't have gotten number 11.
Sure. And you got to know that. You've got to have intel on your in-state guys and know when you can take advantage of the market inefficiencies. No right. question.
KJ Winston, 4-star, but do you know he was ranked as the 34th best safety in the class? He was ranked as the 7th best player in Maryland. That is it. But then as you go down to the lower portion of the class, you had Vega Ioane, Zane Durant, Cam Miller. Oh, and by the way, they got a transfer guy by the name of Chop Robinson that year also.
Sure.
But that's the kind of class, and I know it's easier said than done to just say, oh, go get a good recruiting class. But they had elite guys. They had the 5-stars. This class fit your description. They were also smart with – oh, and I didn't mention Catron Allen. But
okay, and so now let's talk about the class that preceded them, Jim, that had everybody, all the sky is falling, James Franklin lost his touch, Penn State can't recruit good kids in the new environment, da-da-da-da-da. Let me just give you some names from the 2021 class, which, to be fair, is overall underwhelming compared to that star-studded group you just listed that contains many starters who are going to have to be impact starters if we're going to go big places in 2024. So 2021 class headlined by our guy, Landon Tengwall, who I think was going to be talked about right up there with some of Goon's teammates from the 94 line had he not had to medically retire. So let's just set that aside. But that was a great hit right there. Let me just give you some names on this year's team from the 2021 class, okay? Harrison Wallace, Liam Clifford, Jalen Reed, Khalil Dinkins, Zaki Wheatley, Kobe King. Those are the big names I'm going to throw right out in terms of what did I just name? Five or six guys. And what did I say? Go find me five or six guys in a class who can be glue guys, who can be Nittany Lions, and who are talked about in bar conversations about who was a guy you thought never got enough credit for what he meant to the team. Like you think about a player like Matt Rice on the 2005 Nittany Lions, or a kid like Josh Hall or Tyrell Sales on the 2008 team. Every conference champion we have had outside of the 94 juggernaut, a good Penn State football fan can tick off four or five guys who were unheralded but made a big difference. And I think those are all guys that I just mentioned. If we're going to have a really good season, I guarantee you at least two or three of them are going to play a big role and endear themselves to the fans. And that's the model for Penn State. You have one of those number six classes like the one you brought up. And yeah, you try to get one of those every year, but you're probably not going to. So be smart. And even in the down years, be tactical in getting at least a few of those bleed blue and light white Nittany Lions who can be complementary in a critical way to your superstars. So that's the mode, man. You just got to be really efficient and you got to be lucky. You can't make too many errors.
I'm going to probably say a similar thing, Chris, but from a little bit different angle. There are guys who maybe grow up bleeding blue and white, but I think there are also guys, probably more often than not, regional guys who you have an advantage just because you're within driving range. But they come to Penn State, they see the family atmosphere, they feel the love of the coaches, the teammates, the town, and they come here because it's Penn State. Sure. You brought up our buddy Landon Tengwall. I've gotten to spend a lot of time with Landon over the last year, and we've probably had this, why did you end up at Penn State conversation, when you know he was highly ranked enough, highly enough. He could have gone anywhere he wanted, but the feeling was different at Penn State than it was elsewhere, is what he will tell you. So he wasn't just committing to Penn State football. He was committing to Penn State. And I think that's the type of guy. And I think we're describing the same guy, Chris.
Yeah. And you know, look, Landon's kind of an outlier because he was such a, you know, he was a five-star kid. But I'm talking about the middle tier guys you talked about, the regional kids. Those are the ones we're at risk of losing bidding wars to, with like Maryland and Rutgers. And so it's maybe not the top end of our NIL that needs attention. It's that mid-tier, our ability to win some of those battles.
It's definitely the case. All right, Chris, great conversation today. A lot of fun talking recruiting with you, but that is going to have to be it. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us again next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.